from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The United States Supreme Court has upheld the so-called show me your papers provision of Arizona's immigration law, but it struck down other parts of that law. Could the ruling impact how California law enforcement deals with undocumented immigrants? And with both presidential candidates vying for Latino voters this fall, how could the decision influence immigration policy in an election year? In this segment, we want to focus on the Supreme Court decision having to do with Arizona's immigration law and also the politics. This decision was also rendered yesterday. Joining us again is Rory Little, professor of law, UC Hastings College of the Law. Glad to have you on this segment as well, Rory.
Thank you.
And we're also going to be joined in Washington by Karthik Ramakrishnan, who is an associate professor of political science at the University of California, Riverside, but is with us from the nation's capital. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And Rory Little, let's look at this case. It's essentially, in some ways, kind of a state federal case in the sense that the Fed has authority over immigration here, really, and they're saying they do have that authority.
Yeah, it's a really remarkable decision. Here's an interesting point. It was written by Justice Kennedy, so you'd think it was 5-4, but Justice Kagan could not participate since she was the Solicitor General when the case was begun. So the vote is 5-3. Chief Justice Roberts, unlike the previous case we were discussing, joins the majority, silently joins the majority, making it a 5-person majority. Had he voted with the dissenters, it would have been tied 4-4. And the Ninth Circuit opinion, which struck down the entire law, would have been affirmed.
Because Kagan, Justice Kagan had to recuse herself because of being Solicitor General.
Yeah, she was recused. So interestingly enough, it looks like Justice Roberts may have joined the majority here solely to prevent a complete affirmance of the Ninth Circuit here. The court basically had 4 provisions of an Arizona state law addressing immigration, and they struck down 3 of them as preempted by federal authority over the immigration policies of the country. They upheld one. It's called Show Me Your Papers, but it doesn't actually say Show Me Your Papers. It just requires officers, if they have reasonable cause to believe someone's an undocumented alien, and what reasonable cause means is quite hotly debated and not at issue in the case, they have to make some effort to identify their status or verify their status.
Hotly debated because we're talking about the possibility of racial profiling, of civil rights violations, and that whole gamut.
Right. I mean, how do you determine, how do you develop reasonable cause that someone is an undocumented alien as opposed to possibly just a Latino immigrant? You're going to be doing it on criteria that border very closely to impermissible criteria. So what the court says is, for now, we'll uphold that because we don't know how it'll be administered. But we can easily see attacks on it in the future on a civil rights basis. So it's virtually a complete invalidation of the Arizona efforts to step into the immigration law. Last point I'll make, Justice Scalia in dissent, when you lose the battle, you ought to step back and prepare for the war. Justice Scalia clearly lost this battle. So his dissent goes back to 1789 and says, I don't think the federal government has complete authority over immigration. I believe the states are sovereigns and have the constitutional right to regulate immigration. He's questioning the entire underpinning of the majority's decision here.
He also threw out some very strong language, I think, at the Obama administration, which we'll talk with Professor Ramakrishnan about. But I just want to ask you also that when we look at this decision, it's relevance to California?
Well, you know, there's a debate in California, as there is in lots of border states, about what should our stance be. And different municipalities have taken different views. The state has not enacted a law that parallels Arizona's law. And I think the effect here would be to make California's legislature quite careful if they had any interest in developing their own immigration laws, because the court here is quite hostile to state efforts, even when the state efforts are, in some sense, not in conflict. The court says they're preempted because Congress has simply decided that you can't do this as a state. The provision, you know, the Obama administration did take a bit of a rhetorical hit from Justice Scalia. He attacked the DREAM Act, you know, and said maybe this is a bad idea.
He also talked about the borders being unprotected. I mean,
right. And the really important point of yesterday's decision is the court said, look, the federal government has full authority here. And unless there's a clear indication that they, in a sense, want the states to help them, then the states can't, even though you could argue that the states' efforts are in cooperation with the federal effort. They said that doesn't matter. So, for example, with the DREAM Act or the president's most recent announcement, if the federal government chooses not to enforce federal law, states can't help. States can't do it themselves. That's the message from yesterday's opinion.
Again, Rory Little, professor of law, UC Hastings College of the Law, and Karthik Ramakrishnan is associate professor of political science at UC Riverside. And I want to get back to Justice Scalia, Professor Ramakrishnan, in a moment. But what do you think this effect will be politically? I mean, on the one hand, people are saying big victory for Obama. I noticed in today's paper here locally, Michael Yaki, now on the Human Rights Commission, who used to be a San Francisco supervisor, said along with the DREAM Act, well, the piece of the DREAM Act that the president moved forward, and this, it's a 1-2 punch, and we've got the Latino vote all wrapped up for Obama. But Jan Brewer in Arizona saying, no, it's a big victory for us.
Well, I think in terms of who, it's hard to know who the real victors in this are, because there is some uncertainty in terms of what will happen moving forward in terms of what the provision that did stand or is allowed to stand temporarily, how that is going to be enforced. I think what's clear in this case is that it is a little bit of a victory for Obama, but I think primarily it puts Mitt Romney in a very tight spot. It puts him in a tight spot because he's said in the past that he thinks laws like Arizona's SB 1070 should be a model for other states. What was surprising yesterday was that even though many people thought that this is the kind of decision that would be handed down, it would be a partial decision, you would think that the Romney camp would have had a well-prepared answer, but they didn't.
Well, they said that the states should have more latitude. I mean, Mitt Romney said they should have more latitude on immigration policy. That was his response.
Right, but he didn't answer what he thought about the Arizona case in particular and whether laws like these should be passed elsewhere. And even the way he didn't address it head on. What he did was he made remarks. He had spokespeople making remarks. And it's not something that would sit well with Latino voters because part of what they would want to know is a clear answer of what they would expect, what they can expect once, if he does become president, what they can expect the White House and the administration to do. And he is not giving any clear answers on that.
Well, what do you think about the kind of ruckus that has been kicked up by Justice Scalia's remarks? I mean, he said essentially that the Obama administration leaves the borders unprotected. I mean, that was kind of a salvo of his. I don't know what administration couldn't be accused or indicted along the same lines, but the Obama administration fired back and said they have 85% increase in Border Patrol agents, a lot more fencing. That's on the southwest border. I mean, this has gotten into politics very deeply.
Right. It's surprising to see Supreme Court justice engaging in policy debates and political debates. It's not something that you see often, and certainly not something that you see in an opinion that is read out. So I think it is unprecedented. I don't know what kind of fallout there will be. Justice Scalia has done things in the past that other justices would not do, that they deem to be inappropriate for the office, but he has continued to do what he believes is right and important.
Well, maybe the most inappropriate thing he did was, President Obama had said it was the right thing to do, his decision about deportations with respect to children who were brought here. And Scalia essentially said it was the wrong thing to do.
Right. And on that, I mean, so there is this notion of what people call prosecutorial discretion. And the government was bringing this up even in the oral arguments, that with the Arizona law requiring every stop to essentially be an immigration check, they argued that it would overload the system and it would take resources away from other higher priority offenses. And this is something that Arizona faces now. This is part of the reason why the government revoked its 287G agreement with the state, because they don't want their system to get clogged up by the anticipated spike.
Can you clarify the 287G for us?
So 287G was a program that was set up in 1996, and it was signed by Bill Clinton when he was president. And what it does is it's a set of agreements between the federal government and state and local law enforcement authorities, where you had a training program where people would get trained in terms of knowing what to do in terms of checking on immigration status and various aspects of immigration law. And they would work in cooperation with the federal government. At the time, it was called a force multiplier. It was an instant way of multiplying the number of people who would essentially serve as enforcement officers. Now, the thing about 287G was that you didn't have many places that had taken that up until about 10 years ago. Then you started to see a rise in the number of places that did that. So that's the program that existed. Now there's a new program that's coming in called Secure Communities, and that is rolling out across the various states. What's different there is that states don't have any discretion as to whether they participate or not, but it is focused on jails. So if someone is brought into a jail and processed, their information is checked against enforcement records to determine whether they have either been caught in the past or if they're a visa overstay or the like.
Let me get the response of those of you who are listening. We're talking about the Supreme Court decision yesterday upholding the so-called show me your papers. Again, as Rory Lowell said, that might not be the right nomenclature, but that's what it's certainly become identified with. The provision of Arizona's immigration law was struck down. The rest of it was struck down. But the idea that you can actually go up to an individual police officer and say, are you an undocumented immigrant? Let me have your papers. Is still under the law okay, or has been the Supreme Court has given it its countenance. Let me give you our phone number, and you can feel free to join us now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Your reaction to this or any questions you might have about it are welcome. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and you can call us now. Again, we'd like to hear from you and have you join the conversation. It's 866-733-6786. Other ways of communicating with us, of course, by email, forum@kqed.org, or simply go to our website, kqed.org/forum, click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page. We're talking with Rory Little, professor of law at UC Hastings College of the Law, and Karthik Ramakrishnan, who is a associate professor of political science at UC Riverside, with us from the nation's capital. We're going to go to your calls and emails in just a moment here, but I want to bring Gabriela Villarreal on. She's policy manager with the California Immigration Policy Center. I want to get your response to this, Gabriela. First of all, good morning, and welcome for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting the California Immigrant Policy Center to speak today.
Well, I imagine this doesn't create great deduction powers on my part that the three provisions that were rejected, you're relieved about, but upset about the one that was approved.
Yes, we are relieved that the Supreme Court rejected most of the Arizona SB 1070 law. However, we condemn the ruling on the show me your papers provision. This provision, as your earlier speakers have suggested, will basically mandate Arizona's police officers to attempt to determine a person's immigration status. And quite frankly, it would be impossible to implement this portion of the law without unfair racial profiling. The Supreme Court has effectively turned back the clock on our hard-won civil rights protections with this ruling.
And your sense, I'd like to get about here in California, you're thinking about the Trust Act. Talk about it. Let listeners know what the Trust Act is and why it would benefit.
One measure to counteract the Supreme Court bad ruling is for the California legislature to lead the nation, along with Governor Brown and Attorney General Harris, in moving forward with common-sense legislative solutions to defend our values of family unity and fairness. And one measure to counteract the ruling is the Trust Act, which is authored by Assemblymember Tom Amiano of San Francisco. This bill would limit the unfair and costly detentions of community members in our local jails for deportation purposes.
And what is the status of the Trust Act now?
The bill passed the Senate Public Safety Committee earlier this month and is expected to be voted on soon by the Senate.
Well, at this point, would you care to comment on what you think the political effect is going to be of this decision?
We call upon Governor Brown and Attorney General Harris and the legislature to immediately support this bill. Regardless of the ruling, California can do better, and it doesn't have to be and can certainly show up that a common sense solution that will help rebuild the confidence between local police and immigrant communities can happen. And California has been a leader in the past in advancing common sense solutions that defend the rights of of all people. And this bill, the Trust Act, will go a long way in creating a bright line rule to separate immigration agents from local law enforcement.
And what's your sense? I mean, I realize you don't speak for all Latino people or anything even resembling that, but, you know, there's a lot of debate over what effect this is going to have on the so-called Latino vote. Some say it's going to be very much the advantage of President Obama against Mitt Romney in the fall, and others say there are a lot of conservatives in the Latino community who will not necessarily flock toward Obama because of this, or maybe it won't even have that much of an impact. What do you think?
Well, at the end of the day, when we look at this ruling, it's certainly not something that could be considered a victory. Again, I think all voters will understand the need to protect our civil rights, and particularly for California voters, they should be looking at California lawmakers, the governor, and the attorney general to advance legislation like the Trust Act that will restore civil rights and, you know, bills that clearly value family unity and fairness.
Gabriela Villarreal, again, is policy manager with the California Immigration Policy Center, and good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
And we'll have our listeners join us now. We'll go to South Texas. Linda, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling because I just heard you say that the Supreme Court left the provision that state law enforcement agents can ask anyone about their immigration status, and that's not incorrect. That's not correct. What the court said is that if local law enforcement has detained someone or stopped someone legally under state law, and they have a reason to believe that the person, you know, may be undocumented, then they can question them. They cannot just walk up to somebody and say, you know, show me your immigration papers. They can only do it pursuant to a lawful state stop or detention.
No, Linda, you're absolutely right. If I said that, I misspoke. In fact, Rory, she is right on here.
No, she is correct. And really, the Supreme Court's leaving that provision in place is not a very extreme step. They didn't leave it in place with an endorsement. They left it in place saying, let's see what happens. In a sense, it was just premature. But she's absolutely right that you can't just – it's not just walk up and say, show me your papers. You have to have a lawful stop, and then you have to have reasonable cause to believe that they're undocumented, which I'm not quite sure how you have that other than looking at them.
Now, thank you, Linda. Let me get more callers on. Here we go to Brian. Brian, hi.
Hi. I'm an immigrant from Ireland, and I've been a U.S. citizen for 20-plus years. When you become a citizen, you hand in your green card, so you effectively have no real proof that you're a citizen unless you carry your passport. So do I now need to have some new form of identification to prove I'm a citizen?
Yeah. What about the papers that we're talking about here with the police stop? How do you prove you're a citizen?
You know, the funny part about this debate in the Supreme Court, there's nothing in the Supreme Court's opinion about papers and showing papers. That's just the popular soundbite. What the court focused on was Congress has sent some mixed messages here. Congress has established this massive data bank, and they have actually written laws that encourage state officials to call the feds and say, can you verify the status of this person? Here's the information we have. That's the system they focused on. And what they said was, with Congress having established this system and encouraged states to verify, we can't see how we can strike down a state law provision that says their state officers should verify. It's consistent with that federal policy. But you don't have to have papers. The court has actually rejected affirmatively the idea that you should ever have to have a national identity card. They did that in 1940 when the sort of anti-immigration fervor preceding World War II was prevalent. So you don't have to have papers, and we'll see how it's administered. There's no sign in this opinion that they think this is a good provision. They're just saying it's premature.
Well, a listener named Alan writes, while I don't agree with illegal immigration, I'm saddened to hear that my father, a third-generation American of Mexican descent, will have to carry his birth certificate with him, mainly because he is dark-skinned. Why aren't the laws against businesses that hire illegal aliens being enforced? Surely, if businesses were more diligent in the face of the law's enforcement, that would lessen the want of illegal aliens to come to the U.S. I'm a fourth-generation Arizonan, now living in San Francisco, and I feel no desire to ever move back to Arizona. It's increased hostility toward people of color. Another listener writes, this is Craig, could you please ask, isn't the court decision just a tiny sideshow to the whole illegal immigrant issue and keeps us from seeing the big picture, which is for over at least two decades we have allowed millions of people to live in this country, get jobs, send their school kids to school, get health care at our hospitals, give them coupons, WIC coupons, and then you basically have an open border, just like the countries in Europe for the European Union. Is anyone talking about making this de facto open border policy official? Well, Professor Ramakrishnan, Karthik Ramakrishnan,
sure.
That's a kind of taboo topic for most politicians.
Well, and the truth of the matter is that our economy depends on immigrant labor of various types, including whatever you want to call illegal or unauthorized or undocumented, and it continues to remain the case. So this is what Alabama found out when it passed its version, a stronger version of what Arizona had passed. It found that growers had a lot of problems getting their produce, getting their fruit picked. So our economy depends on different kinds of immigrant labor, including low-skill, low-wage immigrant labor. And this is one of the things I was going to say, is that these kinds of policies, regardless of whether they're constitutional or not, a lot of times, many people agree that they make for pretty bad policy. To have a patchwork of policies that try to get at some of these issues in a very clumsy way is not the way that we should be doing immigration policy. We should be doing immigration policy where we have something like a temporary worker program that protects civil rights and also doesn't undercut native-born workers on wages. We need to have an enforcement system that also respects civil rights and civil liberties, and these are not things that can come about with laws like what Arizona has passed, Alabama has passed, and some other states will consider. And this is something that's important to note, is that what the Supreme Court decision will do is it won't necessarily slow down or stop other states from passing similar provisions, but it will shape the kinds of laws that they pass.
But you know, you're talking, right? Like you say, you're talking about an economic situation that is almost complete dependency on the unskilled labor, as you've indicated. I think there was a movie a while ago that said that Los Angeles would grind to a halt if all those who were undocumented were simply sent back. And there are some who would like to do that, which is, a colossal undertaking beyond the scope of what government probably is capable of doing. On the other hand, you start talking about amnesty and that sort of thing, and political hackles go up all over the place. It's like we have two extremes that can't be reconciled.
Right, and it's a very different situation. What's interesting is if you compare the situation now to 1986, which is the last time we passed a major amnesty, and people had no problem calling it an amnesty back then, and you had significant support among Republican members of Congress and Democrats as well. And you also had Democrats and Republicans in the opposition to that law, to that bill that was eventually signed into law. It's a very different situation today. What you have today is the parties are polarized on this, and this is a book that I'm writing now, is to look at why immigration divided along party lines. And it did so before it did on many other issues. And in many ways, the kind of Tea Party dynamics that you saw in 2008 and 2010, you had a preview of that much earlier on immigration, stretching as far back as 2001, 2002.
Rory Little, here's a very practical question from a listener named Rita. You were talking about papers before. She says, if a law officer decides to check whether or not a person is a legal immigrant, what happens if the person is not carrying any papers? Are they incarcerated? Are they taken home to get their papers?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's part of the reason that the court didn't necessarily endorse this provision that was not struck down yesterday. There are at least two different ways you can read the Arizona statute. One of them says you can't, you must verify the status before someone's detention is ended. You can read that as the detention is going to end at a certain time, and you better verify it before then. The other way you can read it is you can't let them go until you verify it. That second reading is probably not constitutional, at least under current federal law, because the feds don't have that policy. So the idea now is if you are able to verify that they are undocumented, you should quickly call the INS. But this will be a matter of policy and let them know what the status is. And then if they say we're not interested, you have to let them go. So a lot of this will depend on how it's administered in Arizona. And this is not a sideshow. This is a really important ruling that says the federal authority in this area is by and large going to be exclusive.
Another caller joining us, Roger, an immigration attorney. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. you know, I see the provision that was upheld as potentially further clogging up, you know, our immigration courts. And that's really inconsistent with some of the things the Obama administration has been trying to do recently with their memos on prosecutorial discretion, their memos and policies that are going down to the enforcement divisions of the Department of Homeland Security in terms of, hey, you know, let's focus our the limited resources we have on you know, bringing in aliens that have criminal records or aliens that have been removed and have returned to the country illegally. So it's like the Arizona law is trying to do something that's inconsistent with what the Obama administration is actually trying to do, and that's just my comment.
Well, it's an appropriate comment. I mean, I think we go back to you on this, Karthik Ramakrishnan. The fact of the matter is they couldn't be locking horns more visibly or more conspicuously. That is Jan Brewer, governor of Arizona, and President Obama.
Yeah, what you're finding now, which is really unfortunate, is immigration already was tangled in terms of the politics around legislation. What you're finding now is that it is also getting tangled in the bureaucracy and the enforcement stages. And that makes for really challenging policy. If we are going to try to solve these problems, we need to get out of these kind of traps, and it doesn't seem like we're going to get out of that anytime soon. One thing I should note is that police chiefs in across the country have opposed the kind of provisions that just got, I guess, temporarily or upheld, and also the kind of provisions that you have with secure communities. So part of the impetus for the Trust Act is you have elected officials and even police chiefs coming out against this kind of a system that unnecessarily distracts them from the kind of work that they would like to do. They don't want to be engaged in checking on the documentation status of anyone that they arrest and clogging the jails unnecessarily.
We've got seconds left here. Rory Little, what do you foresee as a result of this decision?
Well, I think you're going to see more litigation over the provision that was upheld or at least not invalidated. And you're going to see states being very careful. In the states that have passed similar laws, you're going to see immediate efforts to have those laws invalidated as well.
Thank you, Rory Little, Professor of Law, UC Hastings College of Law. Thank you, Karthik Ramakrishnan, Professor of Political Science, UC Riverside. I also want to thank Gabriela Villarreal, who joined us earlier, Policy Manager of the California Immigrant Policy Center. Another hour of Forum coming your way. Thank you for being with us on this hour. We appreciate your listenership. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, and Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.